This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, battles on Capitol Hill over the direction of the war in Iraq, and the FCC hopes to curb violence on television. Is it smart policy or a blow against free expression? Joining us to talk about these stories and more, Jeff Obafemi-Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle, John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow in Public Policy, and E.R. Shipp, journalism professor at Hofstra University's School of Communication. Welcome, everyone. And the big news, as it has been on and off for months, is Iraq. But a lot unfolded yesterday on Capitol Hill. Former Private First Class Jessica Lynch and Kevin Tillman, the brother of Army Ranger Pat Tillman, told the House Oversight Committee that the U.S. military manipulated the facts surrounding Tillman's death and Lynch's capture. Here's Kevin Tillman saying that the military may have used his brother's death in 2004 to direct attention away from the recent release of photos from Abu Ghraib prison.
Revealing that Pat's death was a fratricide would have been yet another political disaster during a month already swollen with political disasters, and the brutal truth that the American public would undoubtedly find unacceptable.
ER, that is a very strong language from someone who is himself a ranger and someone who has that devotion to the troops that he serves with. Was that a watershed moment in this whole discussion?
I think so. I think the combination of the Tillman's testimony, that's Kevin Tillman and his mother, Mary, and that of Jessica Lynch, reminded us of how much the Bush administration has tried its best to manipulate public relations. And in doing so, they created myths about both Jessica Lynch, the girl Rambo, and Pat Tillman, the hero charging into enemy fire. The fact that this is coming to the public's attention now in this manner, because I think bits and pieces of this story have been known for a while, but the fact that it's coming to the attention now also proves how committed the Democrats in Congress are to holding the administration accountable for what's happening in a war that much of the American public no longer supports.
John, is this something that is going to change anyone's mind, or are people already so entrenched in a view of whether or not the war is going well or badly that it's just going to kind of reinforce what people already think?
Well, I think that this obviously is just fuel in the fire in terms of the official verdict of this administration as a true disaster in the history of the American Republic. I mean, it really does bring out the smallest of impulses. This idea of substituting fable for fact is reminiscent of the sort of thing that we chuckle about previous administrations doing, such as the Eisenhower administration, such as the Johnson administration and the lies told to us about what was going on in Vietnam. And here we are in an era with so much history behind us, so much cynicism that is in the air, where we call our past leaders to account in a way that we didn't in the past. And yet here these people go, telling these kinds of lies again in such a transparent fashion. It's not surprising, and it just confirms what we have long known, which is that these were the wrong people to try to conduct a constructive war.
Jeff, what really strikes me is that the Tillman family portray themselves and seem to be very much kind of archetypal patriots, people who were willing to serve, people who were eager to serve. And Kevin Tillman even acknowledged that, you know, he said people might not really expect that I would come out this strongly, but he seemed to be on fire. Is this a sign of really a watershed for some people who may be really committed to the war or have been committed to the war?
I think so. And one of the things that happens when one voice comes forward is that it inspires other people to speak out. much in the same way that they're in an office environment or even in a community where a woman might finally get the bravery to stand up and say that she was assaulted, she was raped, and then you start seeing different people come out of the woodworks. It's because there was a fear. There's always a fear for the first person to take a stand, but it gives other people a sense of empowerment. In this case, I think there are kind of sentiments that have been out there for a long time. And to be able to hear Kevin Tillman articulate them from the outside, from a relationship, not only a brotherly relationship, but a military relationship. And also to hear Jessica Lynch stand up and say, hey, look, I really wasn't that much of a hero. This is what really happened. It sheds light on the fact that this administration is extremely desperate. And for the life of me, it's hard for me to figure out how you can't find some real true hero stories with over 3,000 people dead, with a lot of battles. I am sure that there are some people over there who are fighting and saving people's lives. And there's no need to manufacture stories for the sake of PR. And when you do that, you risk having the crying wolf syndrome, that when you now start telling stories about true heroes who really worked hard and saved people's lives, people don't want to believe you. They think you made it up in a back room.
It's not to say that Lynch and Tillman were not heroes of a sort. They were there fighting, after all. But as Jessica Lynch said, the truth is always more heroic than the hype. And I think that's the major lesson to come out of their testimony yesterday.
All right, I want to move on to a little bit from President Bush, who accused the Democrats in Congress of delaying necessary spending.
Instead of fashioning a bill I could sign, Democratic leaders chose to further delay funding our troops, and they chose to make a political statement. That's their right, but it is wrong for our troops and it's wrong for our country.
John, any new thoughts on how this funding issue is going to play out? Because there really is now a very strong tug of war between the White House and the Democrats.
Well, you know, let me take a hard leftist perspective on this one. I really think that if the Democrats really wanted to put their money where their mouth was, if they wanted to actually be principled actors, then this tacit acceptance of the idea that there are not the votes to override a veto would not be the case. I mean, why, really? Why is it that they're going to make this statement knowing that they're going to be vetoed rather than actually committing an action and changing the direction that we're actually going in this war? It seems that they have this sense that public opinion would not be completely with them if they really put their foot down, their foots, their feet, however you would put it in this case. And so they're going to sort of stick their hands up and say, golly, we don't like the war, knowing full well that the administration is more or less going to have its way. I'm extremely disappointed in that, given the fact that the country now, numerically, is not behind the war the way it was.
What are you suggesting that they would do instead, though?
There should be an actual vote to stop funding of the war, such as it's being conducted right now. If President Bush vetoes, then they should override the veto. It should be as simple as that. There should be something real behind this kind of opposition instead of the assumption that there'll be plenty of people to vote nay beforehand, but not enough to override the veto when it comes.
Jeff?
Yeah, I think that, and I agree with what John's saying in principle, but I think that Bush is right when they're saying they're making a political statement, but I think he's right for the wrong reasons. What they're doing is they're positioning themselves to cautiously judge where they are. They don't want to get into a standoff now and have to try to override a veto this early into the transition period. That's what happened with the Republicans when they had the big windfall. They started trying to change everything immediately, and they had these radical changes, and they wanted to vote everything down. And all of a sudden, it paid off for them in a negative way in the last election. So I think what the Democrats are doing is they're trying to position themselves politically as the anti-war, pro-peace party, et cetera. And by stalling this way, they are able to continue to build what they believe will be a groundswell with American public sentiment, so that the next time this kind of thing comes around, they will feel totally confident that they have the votes in place, as opposed to doing it now and making an attempt and failing. Because if they were to make an attempt at failing an override, then that would be political suicide for them. So I think that's what they're doing.
Do you think that the Democrats are confident? It's one thing to talk about a possible override in the House, but in the Senate, it may be a trickier proposition.
That's very true. But we have to keep in mind that the Democratic control of Congress is very tenuous. We have perhaps 2 years before the next round of elections may change who's in charge. But the Democrats have an opportunity to show that this is not just a Democratic fight. There are significant numbers of Republicans who are siding with them, so they shouldn't play into the president's game of calling this a Democratic political statement. I think their task, in addition to what John is suggesting, perhaps, their task is to show that this is more bipartisan than the Bush administration wants us to believe.
All right. Just in case you're joining, this is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We were just hearing from E.R. Shipp of Hofstra University. We've got John McWhorter from the Manhattan Institute and Jeff Obafemi Carr of the radio show Freestyle. I want to move fairly quickly through two interrelated topics. One of them is about TV violence. Another one is about language in music. So the Federal Communications Commission is ready to consider regulating excessive TV violence. And there's a report that's expected to set up a legal battle between Washington and the TV industry. Opponents are saying that attempts to regulate TV violence face high constitutional hurdles, especially regarding cable, because consumers choose to buy its programming. Jeff, this is often framed as a battle between free speech and protecting kids. What do you think is the balance?
Oh, I think it's a tough balance, and I don't know how you judge it. In all of this, I ask the question, how do you determine the acceptability index? I admittedly sometimes have found that I look forward to seeing how Jack Bauer is going to extract information from a suspect on 24. I love the dramatic tension in it. And my kid, who's into acting and writing already at age 12, I think she would love to see it for sure. But I find myself kind of shocked at times, and I wouldn't want her to see it, so I regulate it. But then she goes to a friend's or a relative's house and comes back bragging that she's seen Final Destination 3, which makes 24 look like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So how do you regulate that as a parent? It's tough in the household. And how do you judge, though, what is acceptable and what is not? What is that line on television? So I do think there needs to be some regulation, but I'm just at odds on how you do that without restricting freedoms and determining, you know, what is a wardrobe malfunction versus what is just a good show. I mean, really, how do you determine that across the board for all genres of television?
I think that's right. I don't think the government needs to be taking the lead in regulating violence on television. It needs to be, as Jeff is trying to do, it needs to be something that the parents and others in the community take the lead in terms of setting standards. I enjoy watching cartoons, and think about some of the cartoons on which we grew up. They were always bopping each other in the head, and heads are falling off and popping back up. Think of The Simpsons even today. Think of those old Westerns. There's always violence there. You didn't really see any blood, but they were shooting all the time and fighting, breaking chairs over each other's heads. This is classic television. So how do you draw a line? And how do you define what is violence and how much violence is okay?
There's also a basic issue, which is that there are very few studies, none that I actually know of, so I'm hedging, that show that the amount of violence that people see in movies or television is linked to how much violence there is in the society. And the violent sorts of things that we're talking about, including 24, I was just in Germany, they love their 24 in Germany, are shown all over the world. The studies and basic common sense show that what decreases violence in a society, especially if any of this has anything to do with the shootings last week, is gun control. And so if people can't get their hands on Glocks, then they're less likely to use them to kill other people. What is on screens and in the movies seems to have less to do with it.
All right, I want to move very quickly. We just have so much to say, so little time. Russell Simmons is saying that basically the broadcast industry has to step up to the plate and do a better job of banning extreme curse words. That would include the B word, the H word, and the N word, which we're not going to say on the air, so use your imagination. This is part of a whole battle over whether language that's in hip-hop is really something that should be regulated. Again, the question of regulation by the industry or whether the artist, for example, should take ownership. Quickly, Jeff, what do you think about this?
Well, you know, being an artist who's sensitive about his, and you know, that's a, everybody can fill that one in from the song reference. I think that there needs to be a certain kind of freedom that you have. I saw Russell speaking about this last night on CNN. His opinion, it's an interesting kind of situation to be in because on one hand he's saying that hey, the rappers are the mirror, so they're just talking about the reality of the society. So if you want this to change the society. But then he turns around and says, well, hey, we want to ban these three words. So I think that I think it's a personal artist choice, and if it's something that the record industry is going to continue to promote, then there's absolutely nothing you can do about it because that's what it comes down to. What's allowed on one hand and what's promoted on the other.
We're just about out of time. John E.R., is this something that should be thrown at the broadcasting industry, or is this a problem with the rappers?
Very quickly, history happened. In 1996, there was welfare reform. That was important for black people. For this week, Russell Simmons, of all people, plus the NAACP, to finally come down against the casual use of this language in this industry so that we can both criticize IMIS and ourselves is really very important. This will be seen as a very important act in black history in the future.
Yeah. I disagree. These words have been out there for a long time, and Russell Simmons is among those who's gotten very rich from those who work with him who use that word. So is corporate America. So I think they're a little late in coming out, and if they're only focusing on these three words, then what they're proposing is totally inadequate.
All right. Two different and, of course, three different points of opinion. And we were just talking with E.R. Shipp, journalism professor at Hofstra University School of Communication from our New York studios. From his home in New York, John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow in Public Policy, and Jeff Obafemi Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle from Spotland Production Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So bust with uppercut, then you can break a dope show. We're rocking dope show. Win a battle and join a crew. Rock dope clothes, fuck fine hoes. Fib and tattle and get support from head to point of view. But I don't care, and I never really have. Dopest heads I know give a voice for those who can't. So you can hate or love, but either way, I've been light on. Trying to right the wrongs and spite on, fight on. Cyber speed.